Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 10th. I am your reader, Ike Rayford. I will begin with the weather. We have a high of 75, strong winds subsiding, cooler, and the winds are coming out of the northwest at 20 to 30 miles per hour. We have a low tonight for 56, mainly clear, and low winds at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Thursday, a high of 83 and a low of 56, mostly sunny and nice. Friday, high of 87, a low of 61, mostly sunny, pleasant in the PM. And then on Saturday, we have partly sunny, breezy in the PM at a high of 63, a low of 60. The wind will be 10 to 20 miles per hour from the southeast. And rounding out the week on Sunday, 79 for a high and a low for 63. Windy with times of clouds and sun. Winds will be out of the southeast at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Our mini comes from Tim Keene of Sioux City. And he says, thank you to the Sioux City Police Department for all you do, protecting the citizens of Sioux City. We live in a safe city due to your hard work, integrity, professionalism, and dedication. You are greatly appreciated. And again, that's from Tim Keene of Sioux City. Our front page news, we have a couple of stories. This first story is from Nick Heiderich of the Sioux City Journal. Jail, 7 inmates with COVID-19. Again, out of Sioux City. The Woodbury County Sheriff's Office is bracing for a potential influx of COVID-19 cases after 7 inmates tested positive for the respiratory illness over the weekend. The 7 inmates were all asymptomatic and had been around other inmates prior to being tested. The 7 are now in isolation. The remaining 140 inmates have been tested. Sheriff Dave Drew said he expected to receive more results this week. With the daily totals of new cases in Woodbury County slowing recently, Drew said he had hoped the jail might avoid the coronavirus pandemic. This was not to be the case. I'm surprised it took this long to get to this point, so here we are, Drew said Thursday at a press conference. Given the close confines inside the facility, jail staff expect to see more inmates test positive. I would be shocked if we didn't have more, Chief Deputy Sheriff Tony Wingert said. Wingert said two jail officers had tested positive for COVID-19 in the past 2 weeks. It's believed they contracted the virus outside the jail, Wingert said. About 25 to 50% of the jail staff has been tested for the virus, he said. Arrangements are being made to have the whole staff tested. Once jail officers know how many positive cases they're dealing with, inmates will be reassigned to new units to isolate those who have tested positive. Wingert said the limited space in the jail is a concern. We just don't have enough room, he said. We don't know how to juggle them yet. Infected inmates were awaiting transfer to Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale to begin serving their prison sentences. The Iowa Department of Correction requires new inmates to test negative for COVID-19 before accepting them. Wingert said Woodbury County had tested 10 inmates who were scheduled to be transferred to prison. The county received 2 of the positive results Saturday, another one on Sunday, and 4 more on Tuesday afternoon. It has yet to be determined how the inmates, who all had been in custody for some time, contracted the virus. Wingert said all new inmates have their temperatures taken or questioned by a nurse before they are admitted into the jail's booking area. New inmates spend a day or two in isolation after booking before they're assigned to a cell block. Wingert said all inmates have been given masks to wear over their noses and mouths, and inmates also help wipe down their cells with antibacterial solution. Since the pandemic began, Wingert said staff has increased cleaning procedures. The facility is wiped down daily, and a mister that sprays antibacterial solution is used throughout common areas in the jail. Inmates also can request that it be used by their cells. Drew said nurses are on duty around the clock and help monitor inmates and staff for COVID-19 symptoms. As the coronavirus began to spread across the country this spring, the sheriff's office began decreasing the jail population in hopes of limiting inmate exposure by delaying jail sentences or allowing some inmates to serve their time on electronic monitoring devices. Daily inmate counts averaged about 234 prior to the pandemic. The jail population was about 150 on Monday, Drew said. Drew said his staff developed a plan to handle COVID-19 outbreak weeks ago and has begun to implement it in hopes of getting through the present situation in a couple of weeks. We're kind of in new territory here, he said. Nick Hayek also wrote a story out of Vermilion, South Dakota, Movie Popcorn for Sale. One could argue that the best part of going to a movie is the popcorn. When theaters shut down a couple of months ago because of the coronavirus pandemic, not only were movie buffs forced to watch movies at home, they had to do so without the buttery sidekick that makes even the worst movie bearable. Faced with closure for an unknown period of time, operators of the Coyote Twin Theater in Vermilion figured the least they could do is help people get a piece of the movie theater experience. Beginning a week after closing, on March 20th, the downtown theater has opened briefly a couple of nights a week to sell popcorn and candy to grateful movie fans. We know that people like there to be something special on the weekend. That used to be going to the movies, but since people can't go to the movies, they can enhance their movie watching at home with movie theater popcorn, said Shannon Cole, executive director of the Vermilion Cultural Association, a non-profit group that owns and operates the theater and sponsors other community programming. After experimenting with the schedule, the group settled on Fridays and Saturdays, opening from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. each night so people can load up for the weekend. Sizes come in small, medium, large, and jumbo. A 13-gallon kitchen trash bag that sells for $15 and has been the most popular deal. Patrons can also ask for extra butter, a frequent request. I think people want the greasy movie theater butter that you just can't duplicate at home, Cole said. There is something still a little bit magic about movie theater popcorn. The theater's movie screens may be dark for now, but the popcorn has provided a bright spot for the community and theater workers. As the COVID-19 pandemic worsened in March and closing the theater became inevitable, Cole still cried when the decision was made. She doesn't remember where the idea to sell popcorn while closed came from, but when she pitched it to the Cultural Association board, they said to give it a shot. It's just what some people needed. Selling popcorn has not only allowed a piece of the movie-going experience to stay alive, it's been an emotional boost for theater workers and volunteers who crank up the music in the theater each weekend and popcorn. I hope it lifts people's spirits a little bit, Cole said. This popcorn thing isn't saving us financially, but it's saving us in spirit. On the first weekends, the theater sold $300 of popcorn a night, equal to the amount they normally sell on a movie night. Sales have dropped off a bit in the past couple of weeks, but the theater still averages about 20 customers each night and goes through a 50-pound bag of popcorn each week. They're not getting rich, but it's better than keeping the doors locked and seeing zero income. We're a nonprofit. We barely scrape by, Cole said. We knew any kind of income was going to help. It also helps to remind everyone they're still here. With the doors open even for a short time, the theater remains a community presence. When the time comes to reopen, people will still be in the habit of heading downtown for a show. When can they indulge the habit in Vermilion again? While some South Dakota movie theaters have reopened, Cole said the Cultural Association wants to see the numbers of COVID-19 cases continue to a downward trend before opening. They're looking at reopening in late July. Until then, the theater's popcorn popper will fire up each Friday and Saturday, saving folks from settling for the microwave version. It's just the perfect batch of popcorn every time, Cole said, and a perfect way to at least keep a connection to the outside world while isolating at home. There is a story out of Des Moines. The Iowa GOP pushes bill to limit COVID liability, and this bill offers meatpacking plants and nursing homes broad immunity. And again, this is out of Des Moines. Iowa Republican legislators are fast-tracking a bill that would give meatpacking plants, nursing homes, and other businesses broad immunity from coronavirus lawsuits, despite criticism that it would also enable them to ignore workplace safety requirements. The bill, which the state house passed Friday with only Republican support, is supported by groups that represent hospitals and doctors, restaurants, casinos, grocery stores, bankers, meat processors, truckers, and insurance companies. The American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, labor unions, and the Iowa State Bar Association are among those who oppose the measure. Republican Representative Gary Carlson of Muscatine, who managed the bill in the House, said the owners of small businesses want to reopen, but need certainty that they can't be sued by their employees. They're trying to follow guidelines, but are scared to death they're going to be sued. By someone when they tried to do their best, he said. Representative Chris Hall, a Sioux City Democrat, said most businesses will work to protect customers and workers and deserve protection from frivolous lawsuits, but the broad protections in the bill also will help some hide the truth. Essentially, this means that companies have been given the privilege of legal protection without the responsibility to maintain a safe workplace to prevent further spread of a deadly disease in our state, he said. The Iowa Association for Justice, a state organization of about 1,000 attorneys who fight for individual and civil rights, said more Iowans in nursing homes will die because of the bill, and an individual Iowans will have no power to seek accountability or answers. As in many states, the coronavirus struck Iowa nursing homes particularly hard, with nursing home residents accounting for half of the state's 622 COVID-19 deaths. The state reported Tuesday that 39 facilities have had outbreaks, with more than 1,560 residents testing positive for the virus since it arrived in Iowa. Iowa's bill offers protection against civil damage lawsuits for health care providers and manufacturers or distributors of household disinfectant or cleaning supplies. It includes many other businesses by stating that anyone who wants to sue must first have been hospitalized or died, and there must be an intent on the part of a business or employee to cause harm and actual malice. The measure says anyone who is substantial compliance with federal or state statutes, regulations, orders, or public health guidance cannot be sued for the civil damages. The bill is retroactive to January 1, 2020. It also would protect owners of meatpacking plants, which also have been heavily affected by the virus. With thousands of workers sickened, the Iowa counties that have had the heaviest concentration of virus activities have been those with meatpacking plants. Owners of a wide range of other businesses, including restaurants, hair salons, and others who serve the public, expressed concern that they could be sued if someone claimed to have contracted the virus at their business. Louise Melling, ACLU Deputy Legal Director, said she has concerns about the implications of shutting off people's abilities to go to court to hold business owners accountable if they're not protecting workers. What are we trying to protect, and at the expense of whom, she said. What are we saying as a country about what we're going to assist on for the safety of workers? The Iowa House approved the bill late Friday with only Republican support after ending debate by Democrats. It now shifts to the Senate, which is also controlled by Republicans. Senate Republican leader Jack Whitaker has said the bill is a priority for him. Our online poll for today is, how do you like your popcorn at the movie theater? How do you like your popcorn at the movie theater? Also, if you did participate in yesterday's poll, the question was, is your child up to date on the recommended immunization shots? 100% answered yes, and there was a total of 20 votes. If you would like to speak out, today's question, what do you think about the Iowa Secretary of State's office mail-in ballot request forms to voters who didn't request one? Sound off at www.facebook.com/SiouxCityJournal. And those are the questions for today. In other local news, Woodbury County election audit finds no discrepancies. And this is from Nick Heidrich out of Sioux City. A post-election audit found no discrepancies in Woodbury County ballot results tallied during last week's primary election. A hand count of ballots from a randomly chosen voter voting precinct Tuesday morning mirrored the numbers calculated by the voting machines the night of the June 2nd primary, Woodbury County Auditor and Election Commissioner Pat Gill said. Everything matched up perfectly, Gill said. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate has the discretion to order an audit after any election, and he chose to do so after a primary in which a record number of Iowans cast ballots. The Secretary of State's office randomly chooses a precinct in each county in which election officials must hand count ballots to determine the voting machines had been programmed and were counting votes properly on election night. It's to check machines. It has no voter fraud implication, Gill said. Gill said the 84 ballots cast by Precinct 16 voters were audited. Because Woodbury County consolidated its 44 voting precincts into 5 polling sites in an effort to limit the potential exposure of voters and election workers to COVID-19, Gill said the ballots first had to be separated from others cast at the Long Lines Rec Center, where Precinct 16 residents who usually vote at Trimble United Methodist Church cast their ballots. Gill said he was pleased to see that voting equipment performed the way it's designed. When Pate first began requesting election audits, Gill said he thought it was a waste of time. But with more voters nowadays voicing suspicion of election results, whether warranted or not, Gill said he's happy to perform the audits. I think it's a good way to instill some credibility back with elections, he said. Had Tuesday's count not matched the election night numbers, the county could have been required to do a recount of all the county's ballots. That would have been a lengthy task, considering 16,787 Woodbury County voters cast ballots, a county record for a primary election, surpassing the previous high of 16,652 in 1994. The previous record high was driven by then U.S. Representative Fred Grandy of Sioux City challenging incumbent Governor Terry Branstad. Several high-profile races contributed to record numbers statewide on June 2nd, as did a sharp increase in the number of citizens who voted via absentee ballot. Because of COVID-19 pandemic concerns, Pate mailed absentee ballot applications to every Iowa voter, urging them to vote absentee rather than at the polls. As a result, more than 500,000 Iowans voted, more than 420,000 of them via absentee ballot. South Sioux City Police Department receives $220,000 for coronavirus-related project, and this is in South Sioux City, Nebraska. The South Sioux City Police Department was awarded $145,082 through the Department of Justice Coronavirus Emergency Supplemental Funding, CESF, program, with an additional $75,676 awarded through the Nebraska Commission on Law Enforcement and Criminal Justice e-citation program. The South Sioux City Police Department is cited for the award as these funds will support a variety of needed projects to prevent, prepare for, and respond to the coronavirus, particularly as it relates to law enforcement in the local area, Mayor Rod Cope said. Sioux County settles jail lawsuit for $100,000. Nick Heyrick of the Sioux City Journal. Orange City, Iowa. Sioux County has settled a pair of lawsuits accusing the county and its jail staff of negligence for a combined $100,000. The Sioux County Board of Supervisors on May 12th approved $50,000 settlements with the estate of Dustin Herbus, who died of suicide in the jail in January 2018, and with Cammy Jill Skibout, who was injured in a suicide attempt in 2017. The county must pay $10,000 in deductibles, and its insurance carrier will pay the remainder of the settlement amounts. Herbst's lawsuit was dismissed Tuesday, and Skibout's was dismissed June 3rd. Both were filed in U.S. District Court in Sioux City. General releases in each case said the county denies doing anything improper or illegal in both incidents, and the settlements do not constitute an admission of liability. Sioux City Attorney Doug Phillips, who represented the county, said he and the county had no comment on the settlement agreements. Melinda Benoit, the executive of Herb's estate, sued the county and five correction officers in June 2019, saying jailers had failed to pay heed to Herb's warning signs of suicide, despite being aware that he had made statements via text message and in phone calls that he had been contemplating suicide and had cut off contact with his girlfriend and family prior to January 28, 2018, when he was found unresponsive in his jail cell after hanging himself. Herbst, 29, was in custody awaiting trial on federal drug and firearms charges. Skibout, who was in custody on drug possession charges, broke her leg and kneecap after attempting to hang herself with a bed sheet in the jail on December 5, 2017. She sued the county and four jailers in November, saying they did not pay attention to her request for mental health treatment. She also said jail staff did not take necessary precautions and failed to follow the county's suicide prevention policies after she had told them she had been having suicide thoughts. Nurses Salute premieres Wednesday on website. Ready for a premiere? At 5 p.m. today, we'll debut our look at Nurses The Heart of Healthcare at SiouxCityJournal.com. In the video, you'll meet the five outstanding nurses honored by the two-year-old program. They'll talk about their work, inspiration, and challenges during a time of pandemic. The five: Sue Legree, Stephanie Hill, Greg Schulten, Chris Van Beek, and Tricia DeBoer. represent different areas of the nursing field and explain how the coronavirus has changed the way they do business. Last year, when the journal presented the first nursing honors, we were able to hold the celebration at the Marriott Hotel in South Sioux City. This year, the presentation had to go online. We think you'll agree, videographer Jesse Brothers' work gives you an even closer look at the recipients and their reaction to the honor. The event was presented by the Unity Point Health Sioux City with sponsors Floyd Valley Healthcare, Mercy One Morningside College, and Briarcliff University's and Siouxland Community Health Center. The hope is that the celebration will return next year to a venue. This year, however, you're getting an online exclusive. And there are pictures of the five individuals. Chris Van Beek of Mercy One Home Care is one of the Sioux City Journal Nurses of the Year. Stephanie Hill of Cherokee Regional Medical Center. Sue Legree of the Junie Nyland Center, Tricia DeBoer of Orange City Area Health Systems and Northwestern College, and Greg Scholten of Cherokee Mental Health Institute. So congratulations to all of those individuals. Turning over to our opinion, and we have an opinion from the Sioux City Journal and its editorial board, which consists of Bruce Miller, editor, Michael Gores, editorial page editor, Dave Driesen, managing editor in news, and Tim Hines, chief photographer. And as always, our opinion editorials in this section represent the consensus view of the Sioux City Journal's editorial board. Opinions expressed in other voices, editorials and columns, letters to the editor, and cartoons do not necessarily reflect the views of the editorial board. The opinion, Feenstra should consider all of the 4th District's agenda. With the Republican primary now behind us, Randy Feenstra might want to revisit the campaign strategy before the fall election. In his ads, Feenstra said he wanted to go to Washington to build Donald Trump's wall and support his agenda. Now, though, a lot has happened in the country to suggest business as usual is not the best approach. For decades, Northwest Iowa elected congressmen, Republican and Democrat, who didn't represent the president. They looked out for the interests of all residents of the district. If that meant going against the sitting president, they did. When Steve King was elected, much of that changed. Rather than represent all of his constituents, he looked to the right and followed suit, even if it wasn't in Iowa's best interest. This week, when we see the president building a wall around the White House and posting snarky tweets about everyone who questions his leadership style, we've learned just how important an independent thinker really is. Utah Senator Mitt Romney broke from the pack. Others have too. To get at the problems we face in policing, healthcare, and immigration, we need to have conversations, not rubber stamps. Hardliners in both parties need to remember they represent all of the people in their states and districts, not just the majority who sent them to Washington. President Trump's eagerness to blame any of the country's problems on his opponents suggests he's not the person Feenstra should emulate. Instead of compounding those problems, he should solve them and explain to the public what he's doing. As Harry Truman liked to point out, the buck stops here. When protests broke out in Minneapolis calling for the prosecution of those responsible for George Floyd's death, Trump launched a Twitter attack on the city's mayor, Jacob Frey, calling him the very weak radical left mayor, and later saying when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Instead of quelling the storm, he threw another log on the fire. Twitter stepped in, added a warning about glorifying violence, and quickly became a new target for the social media savvy president. Diversion, a reality television model, shouldn't be a political attribute. Digging in and solving problems should. Now, as Feenstra, the Republican, begins his campaign against J.D. Scholten, the Democrat, he might want to read the room and consider all of the 4th District's agenda. We already know Trump's. Our opinion editorial represents the consensus view of the Sioux City Journal editorial board. If you would like to share your opinion, we welcome and encourage reader feedback. Letters to the editor must be no longer than 250 words and will be edited for length. Please include your name, hometown, and daytime telephone number for verification. Phone numbers will not be printed. We will not publish anonymous letters or open letters or letters to a third party. We will publish no more than 2 letters and 2 mini editorials per writer a month. Letters, mini editorials, and guest opinions may be published or distributed in print, electronic, or other forms. Our quote for the day is, "A great man is always willing to be little." And that is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, a poet, essayist, lecturer, and philosopher. If you are celebrating a birthday today, your horoscope says, rethink your motives. Base decisions on what works best for you and those you love. Giving in to temptation or letting someone redirect you will deter success and personal satisfaction. Make adjustments that are intelligent and geared toward what you want to achieve, and everything else will fall into place. And again, happy birthday for you, June 10th birthdayers. If you are celebrating a birthday, some others who had birthdays or are celebrating birthdays: Hattie McDaniels, actress. Prince Philip, husband of Queen Elizabeth II, is celebrating today. Judy Garland, actress and singer, had a birthday today. Nat Hentoff, historian, author. Maurice Sendak, Jeannie Triplehorn, she's an actress. Elizabeth Hurley, also an actress and model. Bill Burr, actor and comedian. And Tara Lipinski, figure skater. Andy Schleck, a cyclist. And Kate Upton, model and actress, are all celebrating birthdays with you today. Couple of interesting sports stories before we go to our obituary. The Bandits will cancel their season for the year. And this is from Justin Rust of Sioux City, of the Sioux City Journal. Sioux City Bandits owner Bob Scott was the one who held out the longest in the CIF. Scott kept holding out, hoping that a CIF season could happen so the Sioux City fans could see another competitive Bandits team on the field. On Tuesday, the Champions Indoor Football League had to give in as the board of directors announced that the 2020 season had been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. "I just feel bad for the fans. They've been so loyal throughout the year," said Scott, who is also Sioux City's mayor. "That's why we waited and waited. I was one of the holdouts, but it didn't happen. They will remain loyal, and we will put a product on the field next year that they can be proud of." Other indoor leagues canceled their seasons weeks ago, but the CIF kept altering its plans for a season instead of canceling it outright at first. Scott said that there was a mini season in the works, but with not enough states fully opened up, it was too difficult for the 17 league to move forward with the modified season this summer. "We had dates and a schedule, and we could have played about 5 games, had all of that ready. But with restrictions in Texas, Omaha, Kansas is pretty open, and Oklahoma is halfway opened up," Scott said. "But not having the ability to play the Texas teams in Omaha and us were limited. So it wasn't going to work. When you can't play your biggest rival, that makes it tough." The CIF has 2 teams from Texas, the Amarillo Venom and the West Texas Warbirds, along with Oklahoma Flying Aces, the Salina Liberty, the Wichita Force, along with the Omaha Beef and the Bandits. "It's been a whirlwind for the CIF since the 2019 season ended. Back in September, talks were leaked that the CIF was going to combine with the National Arena League, an indoor football league, with most of its teams on the East Coast." So that's, you know, also a story from the GPAC. They're taking the first steps to open up the season. The Great Plains Athletic Conference took its first steps towards sharpening the 2020 fall athletic season, while Commissioner Corey Wester made sure to say there are more steps to come. "It was a big step, first step for the GPAC since the coronavirus pandemic wiped out all spring activities and has kept athletes from the school's campuses." On Tuesday, Wester announced student athletes may begin practices no earlier than Saturday, August 15th. Competition, both conference and non-conference, may begin no earlier than Saturday, September 5th for all fall sports except for football, which will start no earlier than Saturday, September 12th. The task force also set the maximum contest and dates programs can play. Football will play a maximum of 9 games. Cross-country programs will have a maximum of 7 meets. And men's and women's soccer have a maximum of 14 matches. And women's volleyball can set a maximum of 20 two dates to play. The vote by the Board of Presidents to approve these steps was unanimous. We wanted to play a conference that was abundantly clear in the month of May when we had our meetings, Wester said. We needed to make some decisions on this. We have to decide what we're doing this fall. We have to get kids back, have to know when practices are going to start, and teams have to start planning. To be June 7th and have this decision today, it gives some guidance to our schools. We have to have athletics to be viable as institutions. This is a big part of what our schools do. To have our student athletes back participating this fall, I know it's what they wanted, it's what we wanted, and we will bring it all together. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 10, 2020 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Services for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Arvin Benjamin Nelson. Arvin Benjamin Nelson, 74, of Sergeant Bluff, passed away suddenly on Saturday, June 6, 2020, at a Sioux City hospital. Services will be 1:30 p.m. Thursday at Christy Smith Funeral Homes, Morningside Chapel, 1801 Morningside Avenue in Sioux City. Private graveside services will be Thursday in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 11:30 a.m. to service time Thursday. Sharon Ray Wilson of Merle, Iowa. Sharon Ray Wilson, 73, of Merle, passed away Sunday, June 7, 2020. A visitation with family present will be 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Online condolences may be directed to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Berkeley Bedell of Spirit Lake, Iowa. Berkeley Bedell, 98, of Spirit Lake, passed away December 7, 2019 in Naples, Florida. He was surrounded by his three children, Ken and Tom Bedell and Joe Quinn. Visitation and memorial arrangements had been planned for July 24th and 25th in Spirit Lake, his lifelong home. Due to health concerns with gatherings, the memorials has been canceled. A website has been created, www.berkeleybedell.com. for family and friends to share their stories, photos, and videos of the special times each of us spent with Berkeley / Dad. Please share a posting in memory of Berkeley. Instructions are included on the site. We look forward to hearing from you. If people would like to communicate directly with family members, Ken Bedell, and that's Ken Bedell 2002 at civilrightsdreams.net, Tom Bedell, Tom Bedell at twoldhippies.com, and Joe Quinn at jobquinn at gmail.com. Mindy R. Brown of Sioux City. Mindy R. Brown, 46, of Sioux City, died as a result of a swimming accident on Saturday, June 6, 2020, at Browns Lake in Salix, Iowa. A celebration of life service will be 7 p.m. Friday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel with the Reverend Doug Deal officiating. Visitation with family present will be 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Online condolences may be offered at www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Deborah K. Miller of Sioux City, 67, died Tuesday, June 2, 2020. Memorial services June 13, 1 p.m. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, burial Logan Park Cemetery, visitation June 13, noon to 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Janice Lynn Craig of Sioux City, 64, died Thursday, June 4, 2020. Memorial service June 13, 1 p.m. at the Larkin Chapel Christy Smith Funeral Home. Visitation June 13, 1 hour prior to service at the funeral home. Lisa Jovanovic of Glen Allen, Missouri, formerly of Sioux City, 92, died Sunday, June 7, 2020, Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. James H. Rogers of Mobile, Iowa, 78, died Friday, June 5, 2020. Private family services were held Tuesday, June 9, Waterbury Funeral Services of Sergeant Bluff. Raymond Leo Langle, Lamars, Iowa, 93, died Tuesday, June 8, 2020. Private family service, All Saints Catholic Parish of St. Joe Church. Lamar's public graveside service with social distancing, June 13, 11 a.m. Calvary Cemetery, Lamars. Visitation with social distancing, June 12th, 3 to 7 p.m. Rex Winkle Funeral Home, Lamars, Iowa. Bradley L. Johns of Sioux City, 60, died Saturday, June 6, 2020. Memorial service, June 12th, 2 p.m. Chrissy Smith Funeral Homes, Larkin Chapel. Burial, Logan Park Cemetery. Visitation, June 12th, 1 hour prior to service. Lori Marie McWilliams, Omaha, formerly of Sioux City. Lori Marie Lore McWilliams, 50, of Omaha, formerly of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, June 7, 2020. A celebration of life event will be Saturday, June 13th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Waterbury Funeral Services in Sioux City with food provided. Out of respect for health of family and friends, please bring a facial covering as they are required and only a limited amount will be available at the door. Patty Ann Allen of Onawa, Iowa. Patty Ann Allen, 79, of Onawa, went to meet Jesus on Monday, June 8, 2020. Services will be 11 a.m. Friday at Rush Family Chapel in Onawa with Pastor Michael Lewis officiating. Social distancing measures must be followed. Burial will be in Onawa Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of the Rush Family Care Services in Onawa. Condolences may be left online for the family at www.rushfamilycareservices.com. Karen L. Pick of Lamars, Iowa, 78, died Monday, June 8, 2020. Services with social distancing, June 12, 10:30 a.m. at the Maurer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamars. Burial, Hillside Cemetery, Merle, Iowa. Visitation with social distancing, June 11, starting at 2 p.m. and June 12, 1 hour prior to service, all at the funeral home. Dorothy A. Miller of Sloan, Iowa, 70, died Saturday, June 6, 2020. Services will be at a later date. Waterbury Funeral Services of Sergeant Bluff. Victoria L. Dylocker of Cherokee, Iowa, 60, died April 28, 2020. Memorial services, June 13, 10:30 a.m. Trinity Lutheran Church, Cherokee. Visitation with social distancing, June 12, 1 to 7 p.m. Booth B. Funeral Home of Cherokee. Ronald King, Sioux City, 66, died Tuesday, June 9, 2020. Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Creola M. Lambing, Sioux City, 79, died Tuesday, June 9, 2020. Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Harold Lee Burcham, Jr., Sioux City, 90, died Monday, June 8, 2020. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Robert C. Kilberg, South Sioux City, 89, died Tuesday, June 9, 2020. And his services will be at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. And that completes the obituaries for today. Some news out of our nation and out of the world. Senate okays first black service chief of Washington. The Senate on Tuesday unanimously confirmed General Charles Brown Jr. as a chief of staff of the U.S. Air Force, making him the first black officer to lead one of the nation's military services. Vice President Mike Pence took the unusual step of presiding over the vote, something he usually does to break ties, but Brown's confirmation, 98-0, was not close. Pence called the moment historic. The vote came as the Trump administration and the mostly white Senate Republican conference grapple with the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd in police custody in Minneapolis. Brown most recently served as the commander of the U.S. Pacific Air Force. He is a fighter pilot with more than 2,900 flying hours, including 130 in combat. Fines proposed for telemarketers. The U.S. Communications Regulator on Tuesday proposed a $225 million fine, its largest ever, against two health insurance telemarketers for spamming people with 1 billion robocalls using fake phone numbers. The Federal Communications Commission said John Spiller and Jacob Mears made the calls through two businesses. State Attorney Generals of Arkansas, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas also sued the two men and their companies, Rising Eagle and J Squared Telecom, in federal court in Texas, where both men live, for violating the federal law governing telemarketing. The FCC said the robocalls offered plans from major insurers like Aetna and UnitedHealth with an automated message. If consumers pressed a button for more information, however, they were transferred to a call center that sold plans not connected to those companies. Briefly, Middle East, as tensions remain high between Iran and the U.S., the Islamic Republic appears to have constructed a new mock-up of an aircraft carrier off its southern coast for potential live-fire drills. The foe was seen in satellite photographs obtained Tuesday by the Associated Press. Wall Street stocks closed lower Tuesday on Wall Street as a week-long rally hit the brakes. The S&P 500 fell 0.8% Tuesday, its largest loss in almost 3 weeks. Skeptics have been saying for weeks the Wall Street's huge rally, which reached 44.5% between late March and Monday, may have been overdone. Remains found. Human remains were found at an Idaho man's home that was searched Tuesday during an investigation into the disappearance of his new wife's two children, a case that has vexed investigators since last year. Chad Daybell was taken into custody, according to police, in the small town of Rexburg, Darfur. In a significant breakthrough in the pursuit of justice for crimes in Darfur, Sudanese militia leader Ali Q. Shabi, who is charged with 50 crimes against humanity and war crimes, was arrested more than 13 years after a warrant was issued for him and transferred to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, authorities said Tuesday. Police lawsuit. The two Atlanta police officers who were fired after video showed them using stun guns on two college students pulled from a car in the traffic during a large protest against police brutality are looking to get their jobs back. Former investigators Mark Gardner and Ivory Streeter sued Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms and Police Chief Erica Shields on Monday. Facial recognition. In a letter to U.S. lawmakers this week, IBM said it is getting out of the facial recognition business, saying its concerns about how the technology can be used for mass surveillance and racial profiling. Looking at some local nation news, and this is from Dave Driesen, there are 5 new COVID-19 deaths reported in Siouxland on Tuesday. Dakota City, the death toll from the COVID-19 continued to climb Tuesday in Siouxland as 5 more residents succumbed to the respiratory illness. Dakota County confirmed 3 new deaths attributed to novel coronavirus on Tuesday, bringing the Northeast Nebraska County's total up to 30. The county health department reported no new confirmed cases of the virus, though. In Northwest Iowa, 2 more deaths were reported over the last 24 hours, the first in O'Brien County and the 4th overall in Buena Vista County. Buena Vista reported 42 new cases Tuesday, raising its total to 1,212 cases, according to data from the Iowa Department of Public Health as of 5 p.m. That's the third most among Siouxland counties, behind only Woodbury and Dakota. Last week, Tyson's Food announced that 591 of the workers at its Storm Lake pork processing plant had tested positive for COVID-19. That's a quarter of the 2,303 workers who worked at the facility and were tested. The vast majority of the plant's workers reside in Buena Vista County. No new deaths were reported Tuesday in Woodbury County, where the death toll stood at 38. As of 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, Woodbury County reported 16 more cases out of the 256 new cases, bringing the case total to 2,945, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. Siouxland District Health Department said in a statement that 2,182 cases have met the criteria for recovery. As of Tuesday, the 2 hospitals in Sioux City were caring for 65 COVID-19 patients, up 1 from the previous day. In Regional Medical Coordination Center 3, which includes many Northwest Iowa counties, 75 people were hospitalized Tuesday with COVID-19, unchanged from Monday, according to state data. 4 had been admitted within the past 24 hours. 33 patients were being treated in ICU units and 22 were on ventilators, according to the state. And that is all the COVID news that I have. Briefs. Women pleads not guilty to theft of funds. Sue City, a former bookkeeper at a Mobile, Iowa church, has pleaded not guilty to stealing more than $72,000 from the parish. Alicia Jennis, 41, entered her written plea Tuesday in Woodbury County District Court to single counts of first-degree theft and forgery. Jennis is accused of forging the Immaculate Conception Church, Catholic Church pastor's name, on a $9,000 check written to herself. According to court documents, Jennis admitted to the forgery after being confronted about it and resigned. An audit of the parish's accounting records found that Jennis had used authorized checks to transfer $72,101 in parish funds to herself from January 23, 2013 through November 6, court documents said. The Sioux City Municipal Band will begin its summer series of concerts at 7:30 p.m. June 21st at the Grandview Park Bandshell. Conductor Michael Pritchard said concerns over COVID-19 forced the cancellation of the Municipal Band's first two concerts of the season. Grandview Park allows for plenty of spaces for the audience to maintain social distancing, he said. However, it won't allow for the complete Municipal Band to perform. Instead, the June 20th will feature two smaller ensembles, a clarinet choir and a brass quintet. The Municipal Band summer concerts are presented by the Sioux City Parks and Recreational Department. Ingleside Avenue road closure announced. A reconstruction project will close Ingleside Avenue from 14th to 16th Streets. The closure will begin the morning of June 15th. Work is expected to be completed by the end of October. The City of Sioux City Engineering Division said in a statement that the additional closure is due to the Ingleside Avenue reconstruction project. 14th to 18th Streets, Ingleside Avenue from 17th to 18th Streets will remain closed. The additional closure will allow the contractor to reconstruct the roadway and sidewalks. City utilities such as sewer, water, and storm sewer will also be replaced. Motorists are advised to reduce speed, drive cautiously, and obey all traffic control signs during the closure. The Big Parade Mardi Gras Festival postponed. Due to COVID-19 concerns, the annual Big Parade Mardi Gras Festival and fireworks that were scheduled for July 3rd in Sioux City has been postponed. Organizers say they will continue to monitor the recommendations from the government authorities, including the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the Siouxland District Health Department, in rescheduling the event for a more appropriate time. Downtown Live concert series canceled. The 2020 Downtown Live outdoor concert series, which was scheduled to begin on June 12th, has been canceled. Enjoying live music and seeing your friendly faces are something all of us are looking forward to soon. But the arrival and continued persistence of the COVID-19 virus is not allowing for us to plan a safe weekly series of events, a statement from the Events Planning Committee said. Downtown Live was started in 2007 and helps bring hundreds of people together each week in downtown Sioux City. The Launchpad Children's Museum will reopen. This is from the Journal staff. Sioux City Launchpad Children's Museum will be reopening its doors on July 1. The popular family-friendly facilities at 623 Pearl Street had been closed since March due to concerns over novel coronavirus. Launchpad is asking guests to reserve a time slot at their website, launchpadmuseum.com, in advance of their visit. Support for low-income families is still available through their sponsored membership program. These families are asked to stop into the museum in person to apply. Launchpad's in-person camps will begin on July 6. Camp sessions will be limited to 10 children per session. Camps will be broken into age groups of 4 to 6 and 7 to 10. The cost is $70 per camp. Registration through their websites will be available June 15th. While Launchpad is excited to welcome guests back into the museum, there are several procedures that have been put in place for the health and safety of their guests and staff. Temperatures will be taken with no non-contact thermometers before entry. Launchpad reserves the right to refuse admission to guests with a fever. Please keep your children home if you or your child are experiencing any symptoms of sickness. Masks will not be required but encouraged for adults and children over the age of 3. Staff will be wearing masks. Staff will be wiping down surfaces with approved disinfectant during open hours. During the closed time periods, the museum will be sanitized with spray disinfectant using a fogging machine. As always, the health and safety of our guests and children is our number one priority, Executive Director Rulin Gardner said. We will continue to strive to create the best atmosphere for play and discovery. We don't want to change things for the kids too much, so Launchpad will do our best to make the adjustments without altering their ability to learn and play. COVID-19 forces new trial date in murder case. And this is Onawa, Iowa, again from Nick Heidrich of the Sioux City Journal. The coronavirus pandemic has forced a second postponement of a Monona County murder trial. District Judge Zachary Hindman on Tuesday scheduled Elliot Stowe's trial for August 11th. Stowe, who was accused of killing his grandmother, had been scheduled to stand trial June 26th in Monona County District Court. Hyman had been considering a proposal by attorneys to conduct Stowe's trial as scheduled by video, but Stowe informed the court he wanted his trial conducted in person. On May 22nd, Iowa Supreme Court Justice Chief Justice Susan Christensen ordered that face-to-face court proceedings could not resume until July 13. Jury trials are not to take place until September 14. Stowe has waived his right to a jury trial and will have Hindman decide his case in a bench trial. He was to stand trial on April 14, but prior to that date, Christensen ordered the continuation of all criminal non-jury trials scheduled to begin before June 1. Christensen orders to keep courtrooms closed are an effort to limit Iowa's exposure to slow the spread of COVID-19. Stowe, 22, of Castaigna, Iowa, has pleaded not guilty to one count of first-degree murder for the slaying of Cheryl Stowe at her rural Castaigna home sometime from June 23rd through the 26th of 2018. Stowe was arrested November 20th, 2018, and charged with murder months after Cheryl Stowe's body was found wrapped in a rug in a well-hidden area near her home on June 27, 2018. An autopsy report said that Stowe's death was the result of complex homicidal violence, and evidence found in her home indicated blunt force trauma. According to court documents, Cheryl Stowe, 66, had told friends that her grandson's behavior was becoming more aggressive and their relationship was strained. Public defender Jennifer Solberg has filed notice that Elliot Stowe would rely on an insanity defense at trial. If found guilty of first-degree murder, Stowe would face a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. One last look at our weather. Again, today we have a high of 75, a low of 56. On tomorrow, we have a high of 83, a low of 56, mostly sunny and nice. On Friday, mostly sunny, pleasant in the p.m., and a high of 87 with a low of 61. On Saturday, partly sunny, breezy in the p.m. with wind coming out of the southeast 10 to 20 miles per hour for a high of 83 degrees with a low of 60 degrees. And rounding out the week on Sunday with a high of 79 degrees and a low of 63 degrees. A bit windy with clouds and sun. The wind is out of the southeast at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Well, that comes to the end of our reading for the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 10th. I am your volunteer reader, Ike Rayford, and you can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org anytime. Thank you for listening and have a great day. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.